Just before we start, don't forget, John and I are live on stage. The red velvet seats, I can see them now, John, of the Olympia, the 5th of March. Dave McWilliams podcast, live. Get your tickets at ticketmaster.ie.
See you there.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by ACAST.
How you doing there? It's podcast time. John is going on a long weekend. He's been talking about a weekend away for
while. I got to get away. Just got to get away.
So where are you going?
Well, myself and Al were talking and we're kind of at a toss-up between going to Berlin for a weekend.
Ooh, nice one.
Or Lisbon. And what I was trying
also
to do,
another nice one.
Yes, absolutely. And what I was trying to do is, rather than just going there and mooching around the city, which would be great crack anyway, but I wanted to kind of base it around like a gig or a soccer match or both.
Okay.
So I started looking.
And
there's a nice gig on in Lisbon, the Idols, I think. I
believe they're very good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
There's also a good gig on in Berlin.
And there'll also be Benfica or Sporting or whatever.
Yeah, Benfica are playing actually.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, what really struck me about it was the price of the gigs. Your average price for a gig on the continent, it seems, is around 30 quid thereabouts. It's about the same as what we're charging for our gig on the 5th of March, by the way.
5th of March, by the way, tickets actually flying, which is really quite good.
Oh, well then, get out there.
By the way, John gets nervous every time we get an update in ticket sales. John's like, oh no, not another 200 people. What am I going to say? You'll be grand. You'll be fine. So go on, come back to...
But the whole thing was...
Tickets at Ticketmaster, by the way.
.ie.
Go on, tell me.
But the gigs in... It just feels like in Ireland, the average price for a gig seems to be kind of 40 quid plus up to 100
yeah,
and something.
Yeah, yeah,
whatever.
On the big gigs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just feels like we're being ripped off here constantly. And also football matches. I know you don't go to that many football matches. Premier League games in
the UK are ridiculous.
UK, like 70, 80, 90 quid a ticket. Where they're about
go to see the
30,
Rovers for a tenner.
30, 40 quid. Yeah, well, Rovers for a tenner.
Yeah.
But 30,
or you
can
go to see Bows for a tenner. You know, look, let's be equal opportunity. Or you can go to see Pats. You can go see Shells if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
But by the way, come back to just before you go, see Bows have introduced a Bob Marley shirt the other week. They are very clever because Bob Marley's last live gig ever was in Dalymount Park. And Pat Murphy was at it,
yeah.
Right?
That's his last gig ever.
Ever.
Wow,
last
I didn't know
live
that one.
Gig
then.
Ever because he had gangrene and cancer in his toe.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't get it because the Rastafarians do not believe in amputation.
Yeah. Or cutting their hair. That's part of it.
Part the whole thing. So his doctors advised him, said, look, you've got cancer in your toe. If we let us chop a bit of this off, you'll be grand. And he said, no man. Anyway, let's go back. So the Bows actually, I said, the Bows have actually done a very clever marketing strategy with a Bob Marley shirt.
Fair
go
play on. To him. No, but it just struck me that the difference in price.
Well, this is what we want to talk about today, which is why, first of all, the difference in price is the Irish price level has been going up and up and up and up for a long, long time. There was a time, not that, it's quite distant now, but where Ireland was much cheaper than other countries. So when we were younger, if you went to Germany, you went to Italy, it was always really expensive.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't believe how much it was, right? Now Ireland is much more expensive because over many, many years, our rate of inflation, which is largely driven by wage growth, if you think about it, because the biggest cost has been going up and up and up and up. And now we've got to a stage, as you say, where you go to Portugal, you go to Germany. Like, that's the crazy thing. You go to Germany and everything is much cheaper in Germany. Yeah. And yet the society is much richer.
Yeah.
And that is the bizarre thing.
But it's even things, and you know, anybody will know this when they go on holidays. To buy a coffee in Portugal, for instance, is a quid.
Yeah. But their wages are really low.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I get my flat white with a little twist of whatever.
Of course you do.
And it's $3.50.
The twist of geranium or something, or whatever you get.
Beer as well.
Well, interesting you should mention beer. I was discussing the other night with my son and his mates who were going out, and they were chatting, chat. And I said, where are you going tonight? We're going out, blah, blah, blah. We're going to get a couple of drinks beforehand. And then they said...
Prinks.
But then they said, we're going to buy a few naggins. A naggin of vodka, I haven't heard them. They're like 1920.
Yeah.
I haven't heard them talking about drinking naggins for a long time. Right? Naggins were the on the back of the 46A naggin, right?
Yeah, oh, they were the days.
And then I said, what are you guys drinking naggins for? And they said, because it's too expensive because of the minimum alcohol pricing. You know, it's been brought in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They have now calculated, if we drink X amount of vodka, it's going to get us here and it's going to be too expensive to drink beer. And that's the amazing thing. So the minimum alcohol pricing has changed profoundly how teenagers drink and early 20s drink. And they're drinking heavier spirits now and abandoning beer because beer is too expensive. So the very idea of the minimum pricing was to try and wean kids off heavy booze.
Yeah.
And it's doing the opposite. And this is what I want to talk now about, is basically different costs of living, different rates of inflation for different people and how that impacts on the economy. Because, you know, you hear the rate of inflation is X, right?
Yeah.
4% or 5%, right? And then you hear lots of people saying, well, it might be 5% for you, but it's 10% for me.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And it's all to do with what you're spending your money on. So when you talk about inflation in Portugal and Ireland, that's an average inflation rate that you can see between Ireland and a different country. But what's even more interesting is the inflation rate within a society.
Mm.
Whether you're in America, whether you're here, whether you're in the UK, whether you're in France or Germany, what you have is different levels of inflation. And I want to talk about that today.
Yeah, but go on, explain that a bit
well,
more.
Well, I tell you, we're going to get all nostalgic, ooh, right? We're going to get nostalgic. When I was a kid, I loved the smell of turpentine.
Right.
Do you remember the smell of turpentine? It's like, it's the smell of paint thinners.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I know that sounds very weird.
Yeah.
But I did.
Down the back, within a bag.
No, I'm talking about something very different. I'm talking about a nostalgic trip that I'm going to take you now. Back into my dad's garage. The garage of our house.
Yeah,
in
remember
Windsor
well.
Park, right? And you used to go into the garage, and my dad used to paint all the time, right?
Yeah.
When you come home from work, he'd kind of have his dinner, chat for a while, and then he would go and paint. And I think that was his way of winding down, you know, completely getting rid of stress, which is actually quite a...
He was a good painter as far as I remember.
He was a good painter,
and
yeah.
And he did it well. His favourite kind of muse was Killiney Hill and Dalkey.
Yeah, all around Dalkey, Killiney Hill.
But he was good. I remember them being really good.
And he loved it. And that was his thing, you know. See, he's one of these men who didn't drink, never drank at all.
Yeah.
And so booze was never a thing. So it was basically football and painting.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of pretty much standard. But when I was a kid, when I was about 7 years old, what I used to love, I thought it was really magical. He used to teach me how you could turn two different colours, primary colours into secondary colours.
Right, yeah.
And this completely fascinated me because I used to go into this sort of his world. You'd now call it a man shed, but a man shed is kind of like more of a sort of a contemporary blokes. This is like a really old-fashioned man shed. You go into the, and I remember the smell of lacquers and ointments and paints and oil. Oh, this is on turpentine, all these smells. Yeah. And then you'd go in and there'd be kind of old bikes and step ladders and shelves. And remember the way he'd have this kind of squiggly, pencily writing which would be identifying all the various paints and what colours they were and various offshoots of various different colours.
Right, yeah.
And for me, it was kind of magical because you imagine when you're seven, you go in there and this is a weird world and, you know, your man is in there painting away. And then he'd say, look at this. And I thought it was magic that you could take, for example, you could take a red and a blue and you could generate purple.
Yes.
I used to love that idea. Yeah, for me, this was fantastic. Or you'd take a blue and a yellow and then you'd mix them together and you'd get
it's
green.
It's like alchemy.
Yeah, and you get a yellow and a red and you'd get orange. And for me, it was like alchemy.
Mm.
And as a little boy, I just thought, wow, this is the most extraordinary place to be. And he'd see, and of course the poor fella, I saw one bit of alchemy, and again, he's like, oh Jesus, here we go again. But that idea of blending things, right? Taking one color and another color and creating a third color. This is interesting from the perspective of inflation, right?
Oh, because now there's a link.
Right. So if you think about blending, right? Most chemistry is about blending. Cooking, I don't know anything about cooking, but it's about blending. How do you get this taste, this aroma?
Yeah.
And you fuse it. So in the same way as my dad was taking this dye, this shade, fusing together, get another color. If you think about cooking, it's all about taking this taste and that taste, fusing together, get a third taste.
Yeah.
And of course, this is how we all respond to it. Most chemistry is about fusion. Most everything is about fusion, right? Yeah. And this fascinates me because you fuse things together sometimes to obscure or sometimes to elevate. So if you ask, for example, if you go into a restaurant in Dublin on Monday, what you will always see on the menu are smoked haddock fritters.
Yeah, I love them.
I know, so do I. But why do you do that? Because they're the only way of disguising the fact that the fish is 3 days old.
Yeah.
So you take potatoes and you smoked haddock. So you smoke and you get a little bit more smoky and you disguise the fact. So
a bit of cheese.
So what you're doing is you're actually obscuring something. You're fusing them together to take something to create a different taste or a different experience.
Okay.
Now, think about smoked haddock fritters and inflation. Or my garage in the 1970s and inflation, right? What happens is inflation is a blend. So in the same way as a coffee, like, you know, roasted coffees, you get very, very, very strong coffee. You blend it with very, very weak coffee and you get a medium roast, okay?
Yeah.
So inflation is exactly the same. So what inflation is, it's basically a measure of the change in prices of a variety of goods every single month, blended together and weighted for what statisticians think the average person spends their money on. So for example, housing, you have a great weight on food, clothing, all those sort of things, right? So what it is, it's nothing more than a blend, right? It's doing what my dad did. It's taking one color and another color and creating a third color, right? And that is why for many people, when they hear the rate of inflation is 5%, they say, yeah, but it might be 5% for you, but it's not 5% for me.
Yeah.
My rate of inflation is 10% or 15%.
Because it depends on the stuff that I'm buying.
Precisely. And of course, the things you buy depend on your age. So there's a thing when you think about economics, okay, it's a life cycle consumption. So people who are young spend money on different things. People who are old spend money on different things.
Yeah.
So basically what you have is the rate of inflation, although on average, it reflects the average person, what they call the median person in the country, right? In reality, it can be very, very different for people. And therefore, people's reaction to inflation can be profoundly different. Now, this, when inflation is low, when the cost of living is generally low, and I think I prefer to use cost of living than inflation, because basically that if your cost of living is rising and your income is not rising, your standard of living is falling.
Yes.
And what people want is a standard of living.
Yeah.
People don't really care about the cost of living as long as their wages are rising, as long as their standard of living isn't falling. So right now we have this dilemma, which is that people are worried about inflation, but various different sections of society's perceptions of inflation are profoundly different. Like a great example is if you are 30 years old and you are renting and you are paying $2,000 for a flat in Dublin.
Yeah.
Your sense of the rate of inflation is profoundly different to somebody who owns a house and is paying a very low mortgage because they bought the house 25 years ago. The mortgage is tuppence halfpenny.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So housing inflation for a younger person has a dramatic impact on their cost of living and consequently their standard of living. Whereas housing inflation for an older person actually makes them feel richer.
Yeah.
Actually increases their standard of living. And that's what I want to talk about, because I think this is a critical battleground for politics and economics in the coming, I'd say, 3 or 4 years ahead, because inflation is going to be with us for a while, maybe a year, maybe two. But the legacy of that year or two is going to feed into political decisions over the course. You can even see it now. The government are reacting, trying to give subsidies for this and that and whatever, because they're panicky.
Okay, let's get into this just after this.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Inflation, Mac.
Yeah,
we need to
which is rising. Okay.
Yes,
that's the key.
But we're in this podcast. We're not calling it inflation. We're calling it the cost of living. Okay, so what you're saying basically is that the cost of living in general is rising, but when you drill down, it's rising at different rates
for different sectors of society.
Yes,
exactly, for different people, and that's why I wanted to talk about the blend.
Yeah,
so. Basically, the cost of living is just a blend, but when you disaggregate it down into its components, it has a different impact, a different color.
So that basket of goods includes what at
everything,
the moment?
Everything. So basically you have, believe it or not, statisticians who are employed by the CSO, and they go out and they go to shops and they check prices and they come back.
Pick up a bit of broccoli and then they measure.
They come back. Yeah.
And they go to the petrol station.
They go to everything. They go to petrol stations, they go to clothes shops, they go online. This is part of the collating of statistics, which I believe is a sign of a civilized country. Right? I've always believed this. In other way, you say, you know, the great civilizations, they had great art and whatever. I actually think great statistics is the sign of a really civilized country.
There's the nerd coming out.
And a sign of a corrupted country is a country that lies about statistics. That's a really important
thing. That's every feckin' country.
Well, no, but I mean, if your CSO is totally under political pressure, I mean, I know it sounds really nerdy, but the Central Statistics Office is one of the most important institutions of state. That if your measurement is pure and uncorrupted, it actually is a reflection of a society that is much, much more likely to be open, to be free, to be tolerant, to be liberal, to be a place to live. If your country is a country where statistics are manufactured and manipulated, then I think you're in a really dodgy
area. Okay, can I just
stop
you there?
I know this is my weird stuff.
I know, we're going off point a little bit, but I just want to stop you there because... Mm-hmm. You have quoted that book...
How to Lie with Statistics.
...on numerous occasions. So you may have a whole load of figures and numbers and stats sitting in the CSO, but it's the interpretation of that.
That's why in university, my favorite course was statistics.
Right.
Because it's a way of telling stories.
Yeah.
So if you take statistics, and you're right, that's the pure data.
Yeah.
That's what we're measuring.
Which is meaningless until it's interpreted.
Exactly. And that's the alchemy of lots in the economic profession. Now, I've always, not always, but I've tended to regard some of the economics profession as not being dissimilar to medieval priests, right? Okay. So if you imagine the medieval priesthood, okay?
He's wearing a cassock, by the way.
The priests say to all the punters, right? In the monastery, right? All the punters turn up for mass, right? This is why Luther was so revolutionary. So all the punters turn up for mass and the priest said, look, man, I have a relationship with God. So much so that I speak a Latin language that you guys can't speak, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this is my statistic. So God has the truth. Okay, that's the statistics, the data. I, the priest, interpret the truth and disseminate the truth to you, the punter.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about any other shite like this. Just keep paying me indulgences and money and I'll keep God on side.
Yeah. Right?
So the priest was, in a way, what they call in Germany, the Dolmetscher, the translator. And the economist and the statistician play a similar role in secular societies because they translate and make material. They tell stories about the data. So I think you're right. But anyway, let us get back to inflation. Yeah. So good statistics is a good sign, right? So first of all, you've got to understand statistics, a blend, an aggregation doesn't actually reflect everybody's experience. Now, this is very important when we come to inflation because inflation is political, right? The second one is, and this is a fascinating thing, is that somewhere deep in our human psychology, we value not losing money more than we value earning money, right?
Right.
It's called loss aversion in behavioral economics and psychology. So for some reason, pain is worse than gain, right? And that, of course, is a deeply elemental human thing, right?
Sure, yeah.
That we experience pain, we feel pain, but we feel it physically.
Mm.
And if you look at, for example, gamblers, why do gamblers never sell up? Why do they always hold out until such a time as they think it's going to come back? It's because they don't want to crystallize their losses, accept their losses and move on.
Yeah.
This is why so many
people... It's kind of a denial.
Yeah, it is a denial. And this is why so many people who buy assets at the height don't sell when things are falling. They wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And all the time, they're actually losing money. But it's this idea of clinging on, hoping for the best. And this is the idea of loss aversion. So if inflation is high, if the cost of living is high to you, you remember that more than if inflation is low and the cost of living is low. So when the cost of living spikes up, you remember it much more than all the good times when it wasn't spiking up.
Yeah.
So this is why inflation can have an outsized impact on politics, right? So this is the first thing. And then there's three specific problems which make inflation, to use the vernacular, a shit show for politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The first is, once it gets into the system, it's very hard to get out. I would call it, economists talk about rational expectations, I would call it tit-for-tat inflation.
You're right. Explain that.
So tit-for-tat inflation is, okay, the price of energy goes up, petrol, I want a wage increase. I want a wage increase, the price of energy goes up. So it's tit-for-tat. So at every stage, once it gets into the system, it can actually go up. And it's only the rational response. So if your cost of living is going up, then without an increase in wages, your standard of living is going down. So you demand an increase in wages.
Yeah.
Once you get an increase in wages, it means that where you're working, the cost where you're working has gone up because your wage is a cost to your employer.
Yes.
So your employer has to put up prices to get back to having a fixed profit margin.
Yes. Right?
Now, if we work off fixed profit margins, which is a fixed margin business, which many people do, right? Yeah. If your costs are going up, you have to increase prices. Then you, as the worker, experiences more price increase. You say, well, hold on a second, my standard of living is falling. So tit for tat. So it can get deep in the system. So that's the first problem. It's very, very hard to get inflation out of the system once it's in the system, right? And of course, the second problem for the Irish government and all governments within the Eurozone is we've no tools to get rid of local inflation. Because the typical tools you have are your exchange rate and your interest rate, right? So what happens is, if inflation is rising in a region or in a country in a currency union, there's very little they can do. Had we our own currency and inflation was rising here, our interest rates would rise.
Yeah.
That would also push up our exchange rate. As our exchange rate rises, the price of imports falls, so there's a deflationary impact from imported prices. That doesn't happen in the monetary union. So it means that the inflation rate can go on longer.
Yeah.
Right? So if we begin to inflate higher than the Germans, which we will, because we're a younger population, we spend more, right? Then what happens is it takes longer for inflation to get wrung out of the system because we've no domestic tools. So one of the great, the Faustian bargain of monetary union was we gave away our monetary tools in order to have the stability that not having your own exchange rate facilitates. But it means that if you get into trouble on your own, you're on your own. So it takes a longer time for inflation to get out of the system. So you could have higher inflation for quite some time.
Right.
Right.
And so, but at the same time, if our inflation goes through the roof, for example, and Germany stays
the same,
the way that the ECB will react is to up the interest rates.
No, they won't, because we're so small. We are so small. Ireland is so small, right? They might increase interest rates modestly to reflect conditions in France and Germany and Northern Italy, right?
Yeah.
But if we get out of whack, right?
Yeah.
Which we did the last time when we had a property boom, we got out of whack on our own.
Right.
And they said, well, you fix it on your own, right?
Right.
So the same idea. And what happens then is that companies that are exporting out of Ireland that are faced with Irish costs and are competing with German or British or whatever companies will find it highly uncompetitive to be here. And they will go to the wall. So that's the second dilemma, is tools.
Yeah.
And then the third dilemma is the way in which people vote, right? And this is why it's a shit show for politicians, because people don't vote based on the average rate of inflation. Mm-hmm. They vote based on their inflation.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
So if the political class loses control of the cost of living, the electorate atrophies into the various different constituencies whose rate of inflation is different. So it doesn't matter if Micheál Martin or whoever comes out, you know, and says, Emmanuel Macron, for example, says, oh, well, don't worry, the average rate of inflation is 4%. Point is saying, well, it's not my 4%. So I'm going to vote against you because I think you're lying to me. Because you say it's 4%, but I know mine is not 4%. He's not lying. It's just the way statistics blur things, and it's the blend. So that's why it's a real shit show for politicians. Because ultimately what happens is, if you let inflation begin to take hold in a society, it can take a long, long time for you to get back. And the political consequences of that are enormous.
So inflation here at the moment is
5.5%.
5.5%. But in America, it's worse. It's up 7.5%.
Seven plus.
So what's going on in America then? How's that affecting America that will come back on us?
Let's look at the figures, right? The 7% year-on-year figure. Now, you may well think you shouldn't take year-on-year, you should take month-on-month because the economy's changing so quickly. But be that as it may, let's take it the 7%, okay, right? Okay. It's the largest annual increase in prices since June of 1982. So it's a long time since it's a long, long time since Americans have experienced this level, right? And within the figure, there's significant changes to 23%. There's a 29% rise in energy costs in America in the last year. I mean, that's phenomenal. Right? It's and the Americans
huge,
love gas guzzling cars. I mean, they love their cars, right? So I'll just break it down, John. There's been a 29.3% increase in energy costs in the United States, right? With gasoline is up 49% in a year. Okay.
49%,
right? Utility gas up 24%, electricity up 6%, food up 6%, housing, right? Which is 42% of all the weighting. Which makes sense because everyone needs a house, is up 5.1%. So what you have is across the board, new cars in the States up 20%.
Yeah.
And because Americans love cars, this is much more important.
That's big in their inflation.
It's big in that, exactly. So if you're a trucker, like the Canadian truckers are going mad now with Trudeau, right? If you're a trucker, you're in transport, you're a taxi driver, you're anything, your inflation is 20%.
Yeah.
And that's real.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's your daily cost of going to work, right? So what you can see is that energy costs, heating costs, driving costs, all going through the roof, right? Which means that if you are a commuter in a suburb of somewhere like Boston, which is very cold for a long time, mm-hmm. your inflation's gone through the roof. Whereas you're, if you're a cyclist now in California, your inflation's much less because you don't have any energy costs.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Right? And you, and it's sunny.
Yeah.
So if you're a commuter...
Well, you have air conditioning costs.
Yeah, but if you're... Yeah, okay. So if you're Northern California, let's get specific, right? But if you're a commuting renter in Boston, your rate of inflation is going to be profoundly more egregious than if you are a home-owning cyclist in San Francisco.
Yes.
And gotcha. That's the way it plays out. So you can imagine you can play that out for the whole of America. America's yeah. so big that all these factors cause. And of course, Biden's in the middle of this, trying to figure out what to do. So that's the way in which it plays out, that different sectors of society in different geographies experience yeah. inflation completely differently.
Yeah.
Now, in Ireland, it's something quite similar. Our rate of inflation is 5.5%. That's the 14th consecutive rise in inflation, right? But transport up 18%, housing and utilities up 11%, right? So again, we come back to this idea that if you are a young renter who commutes in Ireland, this is hitting you all the time.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is, the only thing central banks can do or want to do in the face of inflation is raise interest rates, right? The ECB, if they're talking about now. So imagine you're a commuter driving first-time buyer in Ireland and your cost of living is increasing dramatically, and the response from the central bank is to make it worse by increasing your mortgage rate.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, what the fuck? Right? And that affects how you vote, because you're thinking, I'm just not going to vote for the establishment
yeah.
or the status quo, because I'm feeling this in my pocket. That's why inflation's so important. And that's where we are, you know? And I think...
But of course, the problem is that it's the ECB. So, you know...
It's far away.
Yeah, it's far away. And we can have a go at Micheál Martin and all the rest, but he actually is not controlling
that. He's not controlling it. Exactly. So... That's one of the dilemmas. Now, I happen to think that a lot of this is temporary. But the problem with temporary is temporary only is temporary for a while. If you keep saying...
the definition of temporary.
Yeah, yeah. But if you keep saying it's temporary, it's temporary, temporary.
Yeah.
But it's going on for months and months and months, then it becomes permanent. And then people say, okay,
this so is now the... So at what point does it become permanent?
I think...
Like, is there a definitive...
Yeah, no, there's not. It's more to do with a sense of, okay, hold on. It becomes permanent when you start agitating for a wage increase. When everybody starts agitating for a wage increase, that's when you realize, okay...
I've been asking you for that for ages, Mac.
I'm sorry. Sorry, we've got to keep it really tight. We've got to keep it really, really tight.
Margins. Your margins are squeezed.
I mean, my fixed price. But you know, what happens then is the economy can go from underperformance in the pandemic to overheating now without any piece of stability in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's why this economy is so weird, because normally what happens is the economy goes into a recession, it takes a while, then we get a little bit more confident, then prices rise a tiny bit, it takes ages. Whereas now we've gone from being asleep to inflation with no bit in the middle. And I mean, the interesting thing, and if we just go back, John, you know, people better memories than us can remember working in the 70s and early 80s when inflation was really high. We were just kids then.
Yeah.
So it's, for me, I'm still in the garage talking to my dad about mixing colors. But what actually happened to my dad is that he worked in an exporting company, and all Irish exporting companies, or many of them,
that's right,
went to the wall because of inflation.
Yeah.
Because they were exporting to the UK and to Germany, and our inflation rate was higher. So our costs were higher. So the profit margins of those companies were higher. And even worse, we tied our exchange rate to the Deutschmark, but nobody believed us, which meant that our real interest rates had to be much higher. So companies that were exporting with CapEx investment, which all exporting companies have to be if you're in manufacturing, have large debts. So they got both hammered
squeezed,
by inflation.
Yeah.
And my dad lost his job because of inflation. So for me, this is like, when I think about it now, you know, you think, is that 40-year cycle going to repeat itself here? Where people in exporting... Now, the one good thing is that most Irish exporters now are multinational companies, which have much, much more deep pockets and buffers than those old manufacturing companies that were exporting chemicals and paints and, you know, manufacturing stuff, you know, basic industrial goods, manufacturing goods. Yeah. They had no buffers, right? But they went to the wall because of inflation. Now, that means that small Irish companies, not the big ones, the small ones, the SMEs that we're talking about,
yeah,
have a lot to fear for inflation because it changes their relative cost relative to their competitors abroad. And that's what happened to my dad. And the crazy thing is, you know, I was there in those days sitting in the garage, insulated completely, thinking that there was nothing in the world that your dad couldn't fix.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But the problem is that's the kids' world and the adult world is completely different. Just a quick message. Listen, thank you so much to all our Patreons. We couldn't do this without your support. And if you fancy supporting us and getting all sorts of fantastic gear, economic courses, tutorials, reading lists, all that jazz, follow us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/David McWilliams.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.